From out of the city, December 17th, 2005. My guest is Nordette Adams.
Good evening. My guest tonight is the extraordinary Nordette Adams. I encountered Nordette originally on AuthorsDen.com, where she keeps a substantial body of her work. I've also been to her website, which I recommend heavily to you, which is writingjunkie.net. Nordette has a unique style that's a blend of both urban and suburban, with a very rich examination of her own role as a woman, as a black woman, as an adopted daughter of New Orleans, and just an all-around great person to get to know. So, let's get to it, shall we? You consider yourself a daughter of New Orleans, influenced heavily by the texture and art of that great city. How has the recent tragedy of the flooding affected your writing, Nordette?
Well, like so many of us, I think my hometown is unique, but I think many people who are educated and who know or who have visited New Orleans would recognize that New Orleans really is very unique, extremely unique. It has such a blend of cultures, the French background, Spanish background, of course, African background, and now it has even more with so many people from Asia coming into the city, and I can't forget the influence of Native Americans on the city's culture. You see it in the architecture, in the food, in the language. Certainly, if you go there, you would recognize that the accent is not even the Southern accent. I don't have a New Orleans accent for anyone listening in. I don't even know if I could really imitate it. Many of my relatives have it. People hear it says it sounds more like New York, Brooklyn, or some people say Bronx accent. It's just a very odd city. I don't really call Katrina the flooding a tragedy. I've come to think of it as a crucible type incident in our history, because I think it's really going to change the way many of us look at our nation, how the government responded, as well as how many people it's caused us to see that much of what we thought we cured or solved to a comfortable degree, we didn't. Issues about class struggles and racism, they're still there. At least people's fears, the perception that we don't do enough for certain groups in this country, and that there's still a large stigma associated with skin color and who's on welfare and who's not and who's getting a handout and who's not. Well, how that's influenced my writing is I come from a family of activists, advocates, educators, highly educated family, especially on my mother's side, on my father's side, entrepreneurs largely, as well as educators and just country folk. But it's caused me to take a look back at, I've been so focused on my divorce and what's going on with my children, I have not been using my writing as much as I used to in the past to address social issues. And I've been taking a look at that, especially in my blog, Confessions of a Jersey Goddess. It took more of an my writing took more of an advocate turn. And then some of my poetry, like Crescent City Blues and K, and probably Lady Pontchartrain Dream, She's Dying, I've gone back to some of my roots, and it's caused me to reflect more on my spirituality, and I'll probably be seeing more of that pop up in my writing as well.
With that in mind, Nordette, go ahead now and favor us with your reading of Lady Pontchartrain Dreams She Is Dying. We can take up the other questions after you're through with that.
Lady Pontchartrain dreams she's dying. Oh, my city, comatose, reclined within our mighty Mississippi's famous crescent, distressed. From deserted Vucare alleys to new ghost-written Canal Street gray, from separate St. Charles mansions spared to Girt Town, Nouveau Black Death, mold-smothered shotguns, from pets left on Carrollton Avenue, dazed, lost, and bony, scrounging and howling at Jesuit High, to the Audubon Jail mourning no peeps to beat, to the beat of Broad Street at St. Bernard, shouting at North Claiborne and hearing no answer, to St. Aug, to McDonald No. 35, band silence tolls, to Booker T. and Xavier Prep, Suno Walls and Uno Steps, Tulane, Mooning, Loyola, and Audubon Park Oaks, from Café du Monde, Café au Lait with beignets, to Magazine Street, snowballs for hellish hot nights mist, from City Park Lagoon to the dead brown grasses at Foy at Paris's neutral ground, from Paris at Foy brick ranches to traumatized Mirabeau Boulevard mumbling nightmares at the prayers of Elysian Fields, from Harris Avenue greeting Bucktown to old lakefront wealth wincing at the breach, to Robert E. Lee crawling mud, to Lake Pontchartrain embarrassed by her leaks. I love you. I am Pontchartrain, shocked. Lady risen, saffron, silk dress, blood-soaked, stuck to my dawn-colored skin, long, thick, waved, auburn tresses, today timid breezes blown, tips dipped in strange waters. Lady Pontchartrain, noble mulatto face strained, full hot pink lips quiver, she gags at death, stench but stands, sword lifted, rage unchecked in tearful eyes, sword but gripped, she gazes at faithful St. John's mouth, out to top of the mart, on the Mississippi's bank, the Titan guarding her river, watching the Marie Laveaux's weep at the Crescent City's heart. An unexpected vomit surrounds Lady Pontchartrain's hips, the residue 30 silver pieces purchased with claims to ignorance of wetlands, lying lips toxicity, bureaucrats red tape shit oozing from City Hall's arteries, the people's lifeblood chunked from Baton Rouge's bursting gallbladders gunk, from D.C.'s poison heart fat bunk seeping from weak chambers, from Dixie beer four-minute brawlings pissed through our Mardi Gras of ease. They've hosed her leakage back, polluted. Oh, my city, I can't compose a blues that flows true enough to our souls aching. Oh, my city, I can't sing heart grief low enough to tell pain shaking our core. Oh, my city, from Gentilly and Dillard betrayed to flood seas, Dalman Road homes, sunken Ninth Ward East to rebel Algiers West, I don't have a best enough to confess to you, my city, the sins against you. The depth of my sorrow, the breadth of anguish unhinged in our indigo guts as we see you, my city, bereft, silent, save boot clicks of soldiers' patrols, drying out from Katrina, cracking cheap bottles of bourbon on our skulls. Rita serving chasers and governmental drunkenness. You float on our dreams, too, city of death. You float on our dreams, La Bonne Vivante, Orleans. You float, good times unrolling. You float and scream our names, grieving babies, mourning your forsaken, unable to forget care, unable to forget angels in Congo Square, unable to forget the scent of Creole lovers' musk and jazz.
Shelley has Ozymandias, Poe has The Raven. What's the one work you'd most like to think will survive you, be your monument that gets taught in schools as an entryway into your place in the digital renaissance? And, you know, why that particular piece?
You ask some hard questions, William. If you put it in terms of what would I want taught in schools, if I think about elementary schools or middle grades in high school, I guess I'd have to say the poem Color, which I don't have on the program tonight, but I think that poem has enough richness and texture. And my daughter, who's a Rutgers student right now in New Jersey, she really likes that poem. So I guess I think that one might last. And it was published to the net, so I guess I associate it with the digital renaissance, as you call it. If I had to think in terms of college courses, You Know Why He Beats You, because that poem was born out of a combination of my dealing with how I felt misused coming out of my marriage, as well as issues of abuse of women in the world, and also racial injustice. So I would have to choose not one, but I guess but two, thinking on different school levels. Color, and then the poem, You Know Why He Beats You, because that has some language which that I don't think would be inappropriate, that I don't think would be appropriate, excuse me, for children under a certain age.
Is there a particular theme or feel of poem you like to write? Conversely, is there a theme or feel of poem you don't like to write, that you stay away from?
I would have to say that I guess there's no real poem that I like to write in particular. And I would imagine that's true, because what I keep hearing from people over and over again is, you are so versatile, Nordette. I don't know if they're trying to tell me I have, you know, multiple personality disorder or what, but I don't have a particular poem that I like to write. I do sometimes force myself to write a haiku or a sonnet, just so I can remind myself that I have been trained in, I have had some formal training in writing and in some poetry courses, but I guess I do prefer to write dramatic poetry that has feeling. I usually hear it in my head. I guess I think more in terms of spoken word or poems that, you know, have to, poetry is supposed to be heard. People seem to forget that. There are people who seem to have this idea about, you know, poetry being quiet, but poetry was first a spoken art form, and I still think that way. Poems I don't like to write, I really haven't given that much thought. I don't like sippy poetry, I guess, really maudlin, drippy, the very worst of the greeting card kind of stuff. I don't like to read it much, and I don't like to write it. I will write it sometimes if I feel like the moment calls for it, but I don't really care for it much.
Is there a poem or even a group of poems that after you wrote it or them, you went back and realized that maybe you'd revealed too much about yourself? What work was that, and what did it give away that we'd like to know about?
As for writing a poem that I feel has revealed too much of myself, I don't think I've done that yet. In fact, I think I've held back. And that probably I hold back when I'm writing love poetry. I know there are some people who would gasp and say, what? That my poetry is so revealing, and it seems to, I seem to expose myself so much. I look back over my poetry after I was thinking about this, because I was asked this question once before, so I looked this over once before, and I don't think I've written anything yet that I really feel that I've revealed too much. I'll tell you what I think I have done. I've written some tongue-in-cheek poetry where I've made myself seem more important than I am. You know, I wrote hyperbole. Like one poem, Hustlers Just Want to Have Fun. And another poem, Duck Nordette Duck, where in that poem I wrote it as though every man I look at, you know, some other woman will want him automatically just because I looked at him or spoke highly of him, as though I'm just truly, you know, the Jersey goddess here. And sometimes I wish I hadn't written some of those poems. So I'm really poking fun at myself, because I think some people believe that I'm actually that arrogant and think I'm, they don't see the humor in it. They think that actually I really think I'm hot stuff like that. And I have my sassy Wild Wild West picture posted and with a poem like that. And some women and maybe a few men walk off and think, my, she really thinks she is hot stuff, especially when they go then listen to a poem like he did not say, you know, F them out. And they really believe that Nordette Adams thinks that she is the va-va-va-voom woman. I guess the answer to that is I have a few poems where I think that I've given, in my attempt at humor, I've given the impression of the opposite of what I really think about myself sometimes. So, I guess to answer that question, I would say no, I don't think I've revealed too much of myself yet. I've been careful not to do that, and so far.
You certainly have your admirers, including young poets who would like to emulate you or learn the lessons that you teach from your experiences. What's the one piece of advice you'd give a protege looking up to you as a poet?
Well, first, William, let me say that I can't imagine anyone looking up to me. I can't imagine having a protege. But what advice would I give someone? Study your craft. I think there are too many people running around today that don't believe that they should study poetry. I believe I said this in my interview with Poetry, Life, and Times. Musicians, dancers, visual artists seem to all understand that what they do is an art form and they need to study. But for some reason, poets think they just start writing poetry and they're a poet. Study your craft and don't be afraid to hear constructive criticism and take it. That would be my advice. Study your craft, and of course studying includes writing. You have to write to grow as a writer. I guess that'll be my shortest answer so far.
You've been one of the many to embrace the digital renaissance and jumping in with both feet. I enjoyed very much your interview in Poetry, Life, and Times this past summer, despite the fact you didn't mention me in your list of favorite poets. Has the renaissance, the digital renaissance, crested? Or do you see even more doors and venues being opened to poets and other creative artists within this renaissance? And in what direction would you like to take your work?
Embracing the digital renaissance. I sort of did it accidentally, but I don't think it's over. I do apologize for not mentioning you in the Poetry, Life, and Times interview as one of my favorite poets. I was remiss. Please forgive me. I have a memory disorder. Just take it as that. But I don't think it's crested. I think it's more people get broadband, you know, more DSL, more cable. What I hope to see, and I know people will say, oh, she's so cuckoo here, is people moving more toward getting more visual with poetry. Ian Thorpe is doing something with poetry videos. I know he thinks that he's came up with this. I don't know. Maybe he thinks he came up with it himself, but I don't think he did. I think other people are doing it. And some people think that's outrageous, but actually it's a move backwards, because poetry really did begin in amphitheaters with drama. The Homer's, the Iliad, this was performed. And I'd like to see people back to performing poetry in a sense with visuals. In fact, a musician that I know who also does music or soundtracks for independent film already approached me about possibly using some of my poetry, spoken word poetry, with music as a backdrop for some soundtrack work in a film. And I see nothing unusual about that, but I'd like to see even more. I know some people are already complaining about over on Author's Den. They don't want people putting any music in the background of their poetry. And for some people, it is a distraction, I know, because they have problems with hearing. And if it's not done well, it is a problem because you don't hear the words. But some people are just snobby about it. They don't want to hear any music when they hear when the poetry is on. And I think they think they're somehow being more high class when they say this. Poetry should stand alone. But actually, that's some kind of ivory tower academia thinking that really does not go with the true spirit of poetry. Yes, some poetry should stand alone. The rhythm is so strong that if you don't match the right music with it and the right visuals with it, you're really going to mess it up. But it's not an automatic given that poetry is only on a page, or poetry must not have any sound with it. So I think that it hasn't crested. I think that people are going to get more creative with it, and they're going to create some beautiful, astounding work on the internet and possibly beyond the internet using poetry. Hope I'm around to see it. That's all I can say. I hope my work is a part of it. And hope to find more people to collaborate with pieces of work on it.
It's an honor having you here this evening, Nordette. Before you go, I'd like you to honor us with one more poem. I think Lovely Man would be a good one. So if you would, the microphone is all yours.
Lovely man, lovely man, sugared to marrow, skin ripped with sins against you, and sins haunting still like dead lovers, deaf to apologies, I touch you in trances, blood pours from your eyes in secret for losses you've not laid to rest. Your cries pinch nerves in my ears, Puccini arias. Your flesh you call ruined wraps me with Herculean potency. Flashes of dream you spoon me. I am a kitten cradled by you. You've threatened to take me dancing, to work anxious kinks out of my aging body, put an end to my boundless babblings and midnight mayhem concern for you. I've been shopping for the right shoes, soaking my feet, painting my toes, so you'll shiver when I run 1 foot up your calf. I want to run a bath for you, baby. Baking soda down soft water, warm, all bubbled up, dip you in and squeeze plush cloths above your weary shoulders. Does the heat feel good drizzling down? Does the fragrance of sandalwood candles soothe you as the light plays on your moistened brown skin? And how do I look? A servant girl, hair undone, running fingers downward from your chest. Will you let me in now, lovely man? Who has cared for you?
I could just let you read all evening, Nordette, but then wouldn't be my show anymore, it would be yours, and I would start feeling a little jealous. So it's time for me to dive into my collections and make my contribution for the evening. My contribution for this evening's readings will be from my book Invocato, In the Arms of the Dragon. I kiss the beauty of your complexities. Your scars are familiar terrain to my lips, cut as they have been 1,000 times, for greater and lesser crimes unpenanced. I do not doubt your beauty, and in the arms of the dragon you fit like a gem in the forehead of a smiling Buddha, alive and dreaming of new winds yet to blow, and yet you seem to know where, if not when, they will take you, make you all that you already are in the arms of the dragon. Again, my guest tonight has been poet Nordette Adams. Thank you, Nordette, for your contributions this evening. And have a great evening.
Thank you for having me, William.
Join me next week, Christmas Eve 2005, when my guest will be mountain poet Dan McTaggart. I promise a great time for all. Take care. God bless. This is William F. DeVault, the romantic poet of the internet, wishing you a pleasant evening.